Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Transformed, Moving to the Product Operating Model by Marty Kagan, narrated by Marty Kagan. This book is dedicated to Bruce Williams. Bruce was the person who gave me the encouragement and confidence to leave my comfort zone of leading product for other companies and to go out on my own and start the Silicon Valley Product Group, SVPG. In addition to being an exceptional human who truly helped improve the lives of countless people, he was the best friend that anyone could ever hope for. Bruce provided me everything from office space to expert advice on design, sales, marketing, publishing, finance, and more. Without Bruce, it's likely I would have stayed a product leader and not had the opportunity to write any books or to enjoy the previously unimaginable quality of life that I've experienced as part of SVPG. I thank Bruce for encouraging me to make the single best career decision I've ever made. I wish that everyone could be lucky enough to have a Bruce Williams in their lives. Part 1. Introduction. This book has three big goals. First, we want to educate you as to exactly what the product operating model is and what it means to work in this way. Second, we want to convince you, primarily with detailed case studies of successful transformations, that while such transformation is difficult, it is absolutely possible for you to transform your company to the product model. Third, we want to inspire you, primarily with several truly impressive case studies of product innovation, of what you too will be capable of once you successfully transform your organization. We start by discussing why we wrote Transformed and how it relates to the books that led the way to this one, Inspired and Empowered. Next, we lay out the main reasons that companies are motivated to embark on this very significant amount of time and effort to transform. Then we jump in and describe an all-too-typical transformation effort, which usually yields the same all-too-predictable and disappointing results. It's very important that we provide you a realistic understanding of what is involved and required for a successful transformation. Many people will try to tell you it's easy if you simply hire them to help. The reality is very different. But it's also important that we convince you that it is indeed very possible to succeed. And further, we want you to understand what you'll be able to do as a company once you have developed these new muscles. Finally, we tackle the dilemma of knowing you need to change, but not necessarily having leaders who have worked this way before. Chapter 1. Who is this book for? Transformed is written for anyone who is trying to help their company move to the product operating model. That includes members of product teams who are trying to move to the product model, product leaders trying to guide their company through these changes, senior executives of the company, especially the CEO and CFO, who want to learn what is involved in moving to the product model to decide if this is something they wish to pursue, and if so, how they can help. Other company executives, stakeholders, and employees who are impacted by the product model and want to learn how to constructively engage. Product coaches who are trying to help companies successfully transform to the product model. One very common question is, we're not a tech company, so is the product model even relevant for us? This is a very widespread confusion. When our industry refers to a tech company, the term is not referring to what the company sells. It is referring to how the company believes it should power its business. Tesla sells cars. Netflix sells entertainment. Google sells advertising. Airbnb sells vacation lodging. Amazon started with selling books and now sells just about everything. The difference is not what these companies sell. It's how they design and build what they sell and how they run their business. The product operating model is for companies that believe they should be powering their business with technology. Today, that's a very wide range of businesses across virtually every industry. How does this book relate to Inspired and Empowered? We wrote Inspired to share the best practices and techniques used by the top product teams operating in the product model. Then we wrote Empowered to share the best practices and techniques used by the top product leaders to provide their product teams with the environment they need to thrive in the product model. Yet by far the most common question we get is, our company operates so differently from what you describe. Is it even possible for a company like ours to change to the product model? And how would we change? The goal of this book is to answer that question. For the past 20 years, we at SVPG have been helping companies through these changes. What we've learned is that there are some companies, mostly newer companies that were created in the internet era, born out of this new model of technology-powered product companies. For them, this way of working is quite natural. However, for the vast majority of companies in the world, the ways of working we describe are very foreign. One CEO described the experience of transforming as changing from driving on the right side of the road to the left, but gradually. These companies know they need to transform to compete in an era of rapidly changing enabling technology, but they have found that the degree of change necessary is substantial and anything but easy. If you've read Inspired or Empowered, then you'll recognize the components of the product model, but those books don't address how to make the necessary changes to how you work. If you've not read our other books, this book was written to provide the necessary understanding of the concepts of the product model and give you the foundation you need. Chapter 2. What is a product operating model? Unfortunately, the tech industry is not great when it comes to standardization of terms. We often have different terms for the same concept and, in some cases, different definitions of the same term. We don't like introducing new nomenclature, but we do need to be clear on what we mean when we talk about important concepts in this book. The most fundamental concept we use and need to be clear on is the general product operating model. We did not invent the term. We found it in use in several strong product companies, and several more use the shortened form product model. The product operating model is not a process or even a single way of working. It is a conceptual model based on a set of first principles that strong product companies believe to be true. Principles such as the necessary role of experimentation or prioritizing innovation over predictability. We are using the term in this book to refer to the way of operating that we find the best product companies consistently use. Essentially, the product operating model is about consistently creating technology-powered solutions that your customers love, yet work for your business. From the financial perspective, it's about getting the most out of your technology investment. It's important to emphasize that there is no single right way to build products. There will be more on this critical point later. But for now, know that there are many good ways, much as there are an even larger number of bad ways. It's also a good time to point out something we emphasize in each of our books. Nothing you will hear in this book was invented by us. We simply write about what we observe in the best product companies. That said, we don't write about everything we see. We focus on what we believe are the common themes and first principles. We are effectively playing the roles of curator and evangelist. The product operating model is sometimes referred to as product-led company or product-centric company. We don't like those terms, because they often have the unfortunate side effect of implying that the product organization is taking over. Similarly, While the product operating model is an example of a customer-driven company, that term has been misused to the point that it has lost its utility. A tougher concept to name is the model you might be coming from. The main influence on how the company thinks of its previous model is generally this: who is really in the driver's seat? In many companies, you'll hear constant references to the business in terms of making requests, and they're running what is commonly referred to as the IT model, as in, IT is there to serve the business. A close cousin of the IT model is the project model, where the CFO plays an outsized role because funding and staffing are typically project-based. If general stakeholders are in the driver's seat, then it's often called the feature team model, because each stakeholder drives their roadmap of features. If sales is driving, then you'll often hear the term sales-driven product, and if marketing is driving, you'll hear marketing-driven product. Throughout this book, we refer to whatever model you are coming from as your prior model, and we refer to the model you're working to transform to as the product operating model, or simply the shortened term product model. In part 3 of this book, Transformation Defined, we'll provide a detailed definition of what it means to work in the product operating model. There are several other important product terms and concepts that we discuss in this book, and we will define those as we go. Sidebar: what is a product? This seemingly simple question comes up very frequently, but there are several layers to this question, and there are different reasons that people ask the question. Sometimes the person is concerned that they are not working on something that is customer-facing, such as an e-commerce app or a consumer device. Maybe they are working on an internal tool used by employees at their company to take care of the company's paying customers. Or maybe they're working on a platform service that is used to build other types of products. Or maybe a back-office-style system that provides critical data. Or maybe the person is building a device and not purely software. We have different terms for these types of products, but rest assured, these are all products that the product model is designed to help with. Sometimes the question is whether what you're working on constitutes a complete product, or if it's just a small piece of something much larger. This is getting at the important topic of something we call team topology. But for our purposes, these are all considered products as well, even if just a small part of a larger whole. And sometimes people are asking the question because they are not actually building anything. Plenty of types of products are not technology-powered products built by engineers. Perhaps the person manages a relationship with a third-party vendor, and they are wondering if the product model applies to them as well. In this case, no. The product model is meant to address the unique challenges of those who are building technology-powered products and services. Chapter 3: Why Transform? By making the decision to listen to this book, odds are you already have your reasons for embarking on a transformation. But with the stakes so high and the effort required so substantial, it's helpful to have a clear articulation of your purpose. Generally speaking, we find companies are motivated by one or more of three major drivers. A competitive threat. Few industries remaining have not already been attacked by new competitors providing demonstrably better solutions for customers. As of this writing, the latest disruptive technology, generative AI, is already reshaping the competitive landscape for many industries. As is always the case, some companies are leveraging this new technology to solve long-standing problems for their customers in ways that are just now possible, and other companies are being left behind. This process of disruptive innovation has taken place in industries as varied as financial services, healthcare, retail, automotive, logistics, advertising, and even space exploration. Certain industries have higher switching costs, more significant regulatory hurdles, or a degree of government protection, so this disruption has taken longer. But few companies feel truly secure. These companies realize they are competing in a battle for customers with weapons and strategies that once worked, but that today cannot match the tools and capabilities of their new adversaries. A compelling prize. Other companies are motivated by the financial rewards available to those companies that have demonstrated the ability to consistently innovate on behalf of their customers. They see the valuations of the new generation of companies, as well as the rewards to those that have successfully transformed, and the promise of this prize motivates investors, executives, product leaders, and employees to pursue this path. Frustrated leaders. Some companies pursue the product model because they have grown frustrated at the level of funding they've been pouring into their technology efforts with so little in return. The constant cost overruns, the disappointing results, the time it takes to ship anything, customers who are losing patience, and the endless stream of blaming and excuses. Perhaps the leaders have read about companies that spend less yet generate much more, and they wish to learn if these methods might apply to them. In some companies, one or more additional factors conspire to push a company to the point where its leaders feel they must take the leap to transform. Perhaps you find your most capable technology employees leaving your company out of frustration with the current way of operating. Perhaps your company has hired a leader who comes from a strong product company and has been encouraging others to consider this approach. Perhaps your customers' expectations have changed, and while they wish to remain loyal, they are increasingly vocal about their frustrations with your offerings and your pace of improvement. Whatever the motivations, fundamentally, companies transform because they believe they need to be able to successfully take advantage of new opportunities that arise and effectively respond to serious threats. Chapter 4. A Typical Transformation. Most companies that we've engaged with on a transformation have already tried to transform, at least once, before they realize they've spent a lot of time and money going nowhere. The story that follows is all too common. We've removed the names, but the circumstances are very real. See how much of their story you recognize. This company had dominated the financial operations market since its inception in 2000. It had always had a strong customer focus, priding itself on being able to deliver exactly what the customer requested, which ended up driving a long series of specials to meet the perceived needs of different individual customers. Initially, this focus on doing whatever was necessary to close the deal achieved some real business success. Internally and externally, delivering quickly on client needs became a key brand strength. That is, until it wasn't. Despite increasing headcount and a culture of long working hours, the time to deliver new capabilities had noticeably slowed. At the same time, there were several new entrants to the market. Each had moved fast to gain traction. The result was that sales had started to lag and market share was dropping. In response, the company pursued a strategy of aggressive acquisition, moving quickly to purchase and integrate additional solutions. But far from igniting a new era of profitability, the acquisitions proved problematic and were not generating the hoped-for revenue. A new start. The board reacted, taking action to make changes at the very top. The company's incoming CEO arrived with an impressive commercial track record. after quickly making her way through the ranks of a global consultancy to become its youngest senior partner, she then assumed a variety of C-level roles across numerous commercial finance organizations. Aligned with our long-standing interest in expanding the perception of who a strong leader is, we use she/her pronouns throughout this book. That being said, this book is intended for anyone of any gender identity. Our view is that if you're a good person who cares about the craft of product, we hope to have you as a friend. As a first-time CEO, she understood that her career would be defined by her results. This was no time to fail, and she had done her homework. The company still had strong market share, a recognized brand name, and was profitable. But she knew change was required. She had pitched as much to the board. Her appointment was based on a mandate to reinvigorate the brand. The playbook was well rehearsed, one she had practiced across multiple different sectors in her years as a management consultant. She quickly got to work diagnosing the problems. The company had become a sprawling organization, with offices across the globe, including in the U.S., India, and Europe. The resulting cultural differences ran deep. After years of acquisition-led growth, the company was essentially several companies with little integration, heavy technical debt, and frustrated customers. The new CEO's previous relationships allowed her to quickly employ the advice of consultancy services, which helped to rapidly diagnose some key legacy practices. The changes would need to be significant. They included a new, centralized organizational structure, the insourcing of engineering, a more focused business mission, and the creation of a new product unit housing product managers and designers. A new chief digital officer, CDO, was hired to lead the transformation effort. Friction and pushback. Numerous challenges were taken on in parallel, not least the insourcing of engineering. Hiring a team of 600 engineers in tough market conditions meant high salaries, and 12 months in, the company had exceeded the budget but was still short of its required numbers. To keep costs down, rather than hire skilled product managers, the company opted to retitle a team of business analysts. The rationalization was that the product suite was complex and required deep domain experience. Change was proving to be more disruptive and costly than the company had originally anticipated. Sales, long regarded as the sole owner of customer success, was not happy with the changes and complained directly to the CEO. While the new CDO reported positively on new engineering hires and the creation of multiple product teams, things were moving slowly and costs continued to increase. Away from the ears of the executives, the incoming engineers gasped at the level of technical debt. Each one of the acquired businesses had continued to operate on its legacy technical stack. There had been no serious attempt to integrate their solutions. Many of the original people were gone. Those who were left could barely keep many of those systems running. The engineers saw no real alternative to immediate replatforming. Privately, leadership was sympathetic to the new engineers, but there was little appetite to take on yet another significant effort, this time for replatforming. They were encouraged to refactor where they could, but to try to find a way to accelerate the roadmap delivery. After 2 years of transformation, things were moving slower than ever. The CEO decided that the core issue was with engineering, and they needed help to deliver predictable and reliable results. Focus on predictability. The CIO recommended a switch to a new, more formal and structured engineering delivery process, and teams were retrained on this process in hopes of increasing predictability, albeit with longer, less frequent release cycles. But with even fewer releases, the new battleground was which business unit could shoehorn in sufficient amounts of features to satisfy the pain and cost of customer upgrades. There was also significant new process overhead. With all eyes on each and every lengthy release, a team of program managers was hired to oversee the delivery process by adding a layer of governance and control. As costs continued to increase, releases became few and far between. Meanwhile, competitors were thriving. The board's initial expectations of success were now all but forgotten. Additionally, a key number of the recently hired engineers had resigned, citing a failure of leadership. Customer retention was proving increasingly difficult, with many frustrated by the all-too-obvious lack of progress. Believing they had nothing to lose, a small number of product and engineering leaders chose to speak directly to the CEO. Their technology, they argued, was preventing the company from meeting the needs of customers, and the level of bureaucracy was now so high that they felt no ability to make any forward progress. None of the options was good. The technology mismanagement of the past had finally caught up with the company. With tens of millions of dollars in transformational costs spent, the CEO wondered what the company had to show for it. After 4 years of pain and expense, and with the combined frustration of her fellow executives bearing down on her, the CEO was informed she no longer had the support of the board. The company's transformation had, gradually, then all at once, failed. Chapter 5. The Role of the CEO. Probably the most important lesson we have learned in 20 years of helping companies with transformations to the product model is the absolutely critical role that the CEO plays in order for the transformation to succeed. Please don't misunderstand. The CEO does not need to have prior experience with the product model, and the CEO doesn't have to spend a lot of time on the transformation itself. But nevertheless, the CEO role is critical. Now, every CEO will, of course, say she supports the transformation. Yet most don't truly realize what this means until much later in the effort. Here is the problem. Transformation impacts the company far beyond what was previously your technology department. The issue is that transformation impacts sales, marketing, finance, HR, legal, business development, compliance, and manufacturing. In this book, we discuss precisely how and why transformation impacts each of these areas. But the important point here is that not every key leader and stakeholder will be enthusiastic about moving to this new way of working. Most will be motivated to at least try out an approach that holds the potential for better results. And many of these people realize that learning to work effectively in the product model is increasingly an asset to any resume. It's also important to realize that even the most enthusiastic stakeholder or executive may have questions or very legitimate objections that they want to make sure are addressed. But some will passively resist, and likely a few will actively resist. Either because they are protecting their current responsibilities, or because of the age-old preference for the devil you know versus the devil you don't. These problematic stakeholders all eventually report up to the CEO, and that's whom they will look to decide if this is truly important and necessary. As the legendary coach Bill Campbell used to say, the company cares about what the leader cares about. Too often, the CEO delegates ownership of the transformation to a CIO, a chief digital officer, or a chief transformation officer. And while these individuals can influence decisions and actions within their organization, unless the stakeholders report to them, which is rarely the case, this same problem will result. If you're a CEO, this may be the first time you're learning that transformation is something that goes beyond IT. If that's the case, it's critical that you consider this new information. It's true that most companies begin...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?